this another whopper just came across the electronic desk here. The Democrat mayor of Tampa said police will investigate and identify the bad actors who didn't wear masks at the Super Bowl. It's incredible. Absolutely incredible. You notice not one of the players on the field had a mask. People yelling and cheering in the stands were doing just fine. It's all a lie. And here's this wretched excuse for a mayor saying that they're going to investigate and track down those who didn't wear masks while celebrating the Super Bowl. Oh, are we in trouble? Okay, it's a great pleasure to welcome back Mitch Henderson to the program tonight. Mitchell has given us enormous amounts of invaluable information upon which to predicate a baseline knowledge of where we are now. And Mitch, welcome back. I'm glad you're here, and you've made a tremendous contribution already, and we'll keep at it.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. What would you like to talk about tonight? We have a general topic. Yeah.
Yes, what I'd like to talk about is so people would understand psychological warfare. It's almost simple in its execution, but there's very profound things that surround it. And what I'd like to do is give people some background in how it was developed and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Before any battle of any war, the first action anyone takes is psychological preparation of the battlefield. And in the theater of conflict, you must prepare the people psychologically for the terrors that you want to impose on them. In the Army, I took the psychological warfare operation, and I studied everything that I could get my hands on.
Hold on a second. They're doing this on purpose. Come on, guys and girls, let's let the man talk, huh? We do have a First Amendment. He's not inciting anything here. He's simply bringing information about the historic use of mass mind control and psychological operations on how to influence and prepare people for a desired result. So let's let the man talk, all right? Go ahead, Mitch.
Picking me up?
They're cutting you up pretty bad. Go ahead for another minute, and let's see what happens. Now, they're doing it again. Hold on, Mitch. Hold on. What we need to do is let me just try this for fun. Go ahead and hang up your phone. Disconnect the call. Todd will call you right back, and let's see if we get a different line that they may not be camped on. All right, go ahead and hang up. Yeah, go ahead. He can hear me fine. We've already gotten, when Mitch was on 2 weeks ago this Wednesday, we already had a threat, and he was knocked off the air twice then, and the threat was very clear, and I did what they demanded. I had no choice, and hopefully they'll just leave this alone. I don't know. It's pretty discouraging when you have the most magnificent document that humankind has ever created and to watch how the communists are trying to utterly annihilate it. And that's what it is. There's no exaggeration there at all. Mitchell Henderson has a right to speak here. And I never tell people how to think. I only ask that they engage in the process. And that's what this is about. Doesn't work for you, that's fine. take a listen. All right, I think he's dropped again. I'm hearing myself, Todd. Yeah, all right, Mitch, I got you.
You got me? Okay.
Yeah, but I also have myself, so that's okay. All right, go ahead, Mitch. Start from the beginning, if you would.
Okay. So before any battle and war, the first action that anyone takes is psychological preparation of the battlefield. In any theory of conflict, you must prepare the people psychologically for the terrors you want to impose upon them. In the Army, I took the psychological warfare operations course. Afterwards, I studied everything that I could to get my hands on to understand how it works. In my book, A Man Behind His Mission, I discuss how the decay of our military and justice system started and accelerated in the second half of the 20th century, showing that psychological warfare takes time and patience to be effective. What I want to do is give the audience a profound understanding of how PSYOPs works. Please bear with me because I will start at the beginning so that you can see just how insidious and effective it can be.
Okay. Yep.
So let's start with mathematics to understand that you are dealing with 8 billion different minds. Each one of us has a unique point of view through the information that we receive. It's like in mathematics, how you build all math on the foundations of an imaginary point on an imaginary line. The point and the line do not, in fact, exist in reality, but we create them to build mathematical models. From this imaginary starting point, mathematicians can create mathematical models to create real things like bridges, buildings, and airplanes. In developmental psychology, they know that a small baby senses everything that it senses as itself. The process of education in society is to make that baby into a discrete point of view that can and motivate the law for the benefit to run. Okay, so understanding how they create a point of view out of nothing.
All right, hold on. We're back there again. Ten seconds. Turn your head and the phone. I don't know if you're on a cell or not. I don't want to know. Just turn your direction. All right, turn your direction like 90 degrees. Let's see if that helps. Go ahead.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I do.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's try it from here. So we'll start with how to understand how you understand the world that you do. The first factor in psychological warfare is language itself because it shapes your point of view. The French psychoanalyst Jacques Lacan said that your consciousness and point of view are shaped by the dependency on language, and what we call ourself is created out of our reliance on the symbolic order. To explain, language is built upon grammar. Grammar imposes rules on how you think. It is like a game of chess where a piece on the board is restricted by the rules of the game. Those rules are the symbolic order of chess. Grammar is the symbolic order of how you arrange thoughts. Add to that cultural and societal rules that define politeness and social taboos about what and when to say or not say something. These are socially constructed and often arbitrary. Lacan says that the symbolic order of grammar and politeness is the gift of communication gives to society, but it is also dangerous to humanity because it offers itself free of charge. Once we accept it, it in fact colonizes us. By using language to communicate, we are essentially unconscious beings, the sheeple everybody refers to, okay?
That's an interesting way to phrase it. Yeah, I got it.
Okay. By using language to communicate or think, the meaning of what is said is dependent upon the symbolic system of grammar, and even thinking about this follows the rules of grammar. We cannot stop any of it. It is a prison of thought. Grammar governs not only what we say, but what we think. It shapes the attitudes. However, Dante Alighieri would say, the way out of hell is straight through it. We have to use language and grammar for counter-psychological warfare because Language is the battlefield that psychological warfare is fought on. I will show you how this is done a little later. Okay. For example, I speak fluent Spanish. In English, I say, I knocked the glass off the table and broke it on the floor.
Okay, hold on. It went south again. Right when you were talking about you knocked the glass off and broke it on the floor. Turn back the other direction a little bit. Let's see if we can stay ahead of these guys. No, that didn't work in either. How cold outside is it, Mitch?
30s.
All right. I don't want you to go out. All right. Turn the other way. You went 90. Go 90 more. Let's see if that helps. No, I'm not getting anything. Oh, well. We'll call him back again, see if we can interrupt the interference. Disgusting. All right, one of the stories going up. This is really interesting, fascinating. Right before the State of the Union in 2020, Donald Trump, before he arrived, the House was full of people, both sides of the aisle, going to watch the State of the Union. And they were all talking and yammering, and somebody who's apparently really good at lip reading got this video before Trump arrived of all these people just yammering and yammering and shaking each other's hands and acting like they're incredibly self-important. And she did an actual transcript of what they were saying and overlaid the audio. She was doing the audio over their mouths when they were talking, and it was obviously a perfect match. And what they were saying was stunning. You got to read this. You got to look at it. Anyway, I'll put that up as well. Are you there, Mitch? Did you get back?
Yeah, he's with us.
Okay, Mitch, go ahead.
Yes, can you hear me now?
All right. Yes, I do.
Okay.
All right, the glass hit the floor.
Okay, so in Spanish, in English, I said, not off the table and on the floor. In Spanish, knock off the table and floor. Spanish should say de llama, which in direct is de. So you can tell that Spanish or Latin grammar evades personal response and goes for the collective responsibility and dependency, while English or German grammar lends itself to individuality, personal responsibility for a person and their actions, and encourages the self-reliance and independence, okay? The fact that the Democratic Marxists want to open up our borders is that they can flood the USA with Latin speakers. They have a stronger base for crystallizing Marxism as a political and social system in the USA, precisely because their consciousness is collectivist and dependent in nature. Collectivism and dependency is an un-American as you can get. You cannot be dependent and free at the same time. And you are not permitted to be an individual in a collectivist society. The pursuit of happiness can only be practiced as an individual because every individual finds happiness in different things and actions. So this, folks, is, in fact, one aspect of the Democratic Marxists' propaganda war, subtleism. Okay. Others, even I, notice personality changes when I'm speaking Spanish, when I'm thinking Spanish, and even when I dream in Spanish. I can notice a difference in my personality when I do it. So that's the effect.
That's very
grammar.
Interesting. Go back and give us the difference again between Spanish, it's a collectivist kind of a language, and German. Just do that. So, I want to hear that Spanish definition again. Yeah.
Yes. Spanish is collectivist in its grammar, and it is dependent in its grammar. Because, see, no individual takes responsibility for anything when they're talking. Things happen of their own accord. A person does not do it. Whereas in Germanic languages,
victim culture,
a person is responsible for everything. Germanic languages lend themselves to individuality and to independence and self-reliance.
That's okay? Very interesting. I had never thought of anything like this before. The whole language, the whole culture of the language is that no one's really responsible. If you think about it, they're victims.
Right.
It happened. Wasn't my fault.
Sure.
I didn't do anything.
Yeah. Exactly.
No.
So you see the very thing, people from Latin America flood over our borders into the United States is an act of slavery. Okay.
It's an act of
the
what?
Second, psychological warfare.
Psychological so warfare. Okay. Yeah.
An act of slavery. In fact, as it means government, they're settled. My Gramsci that we fully acquiesce to the culture that we were born into. I'm a child of the 60s, and I can tell clearly what effect the 60s cultures had on me. I actually regret being so naive as to accept that culture. But I am even more afraid of the culture that my children and grandchildren have to put up with and go through, that they acquiesce to. Okay, so Gramsci is very relevant to what we see happening in our nation now. In 1936, the Frankfurt School of Marxian Freudianism settled in Columbia University Teachers College. The first thing they did was stop calling themselves Marxists. Adorno and Horkheimer decided to rename Marxism critical theory as a euphemism for Marxism. They started the psychological war on Americans way back then through our educational system. Gramsci knew that people were conditioned to think that Marxism was bad, so if they presented their ideas as Marxist, they would be met with resistance. So they merely changed the name to critical theory and thus postmodernism. The cultural Marxists set out to create a new socialist man by creating a Marxist culture that they would unthinkingly acquiesce to and call it critical theory. As you look at the half of America that are devout and committed Marxists, you have to understand that not hardly any of them even know that they are Marxists. They have no idea what Marxism is. I lost my best friend from the Vietnam War just this year, after 49 years of friendship, because I noticed that he was a Marxist, and I said, well, you're a Marxist. And he says, I'm not a Marxist. I've never read anything by Marx in my life. I've never read anything about Marx. And then I said, well, then how do you know you're not a Marxist if you know nothing about it? That ended the friendship right there.
Very good. Touché.
So the thing is that... we have a deeply polarized half of our ambient conscious is to live in the idea what or who they are. Let's say that they are Lacan's unconscious people. They are living brain dead in effect. They're the living brain dead in effect. They first step into awakening them. Would be to make them realize that they are Marxists, just as an alcoholic must realize that they are an alcoholic before they can even begin the journey to recovery. To understand the outcome of this unthinking acquiescence to the culture that you were born into, Oscar Wilde said in the 19th century, he said, most people are other people. Their thoughts are someone else's opinions. Their lives a mimicry, their passions a quotation. This describes the majority of people that you meet. What about the impossibility of reasoning with these people? An Ice Man, a 20th century Franco-American author, said, we do not see the world the way it is. We see the world the way we are. So it's hard to get through to people, okay? As long as people are convinced that they are, in fact, Democrats, liberals, or progressives, they will never know that they are really Marxists. This was all done intentionally as a psychological warfare program against the American people, and it is wildly successful. The Marxists use psychological warfare strategy of the inevitability of gradualism. It turns out that World War II was a war to save communism from extinction, and the Cold War was not capitalism versus communism, but a struggle between the USA and the USSR to see who would rule the Marxist globalist world government.
Let me go back, if you would, to the quote there that World War II was a war fought to prevent the end
the
of communism.
Of communism. Then the Cold War was to decide who it was that was going to rule world communism, the USSR or the USA. Okay?
Got it. Okay. Looks like we won, didn't we, eventually? Hold on, Mitch. Just take a break there for a second. Sorry about the interruptions, everyone, but I'm sure you're getting enough of this to certainly benefit from it, and then some. We'll be right back with Mitch Henderson. Okay, and welcome back. Thanks again for staying with us, and I know you realize that Mitchell Henderson is a very wise man, sharing some very important information, and that's why they are causing trouble. Go ahead, Mitch, let's see how we do this half hour.
Okay, so let's consider how all of this is applied, because we can identify this in our lives happening now. We will refer to George Orwell's book, 1984, his appendix to the book.
Okay, hold on. Back up to Orwell's 1984. That's when they started to chop it up again. Just back up to there and turn your direction a little, and let's see if that helps. No, that's not working either. Not yet. Just
any
little
better?
Pieces.
Better?
That's better.
Better.
That's
okay.
Better. All right.
Okay, so Orwell's 1984, he has an appendix called The Principles of Newspeak. Orwell, he says that you can change the language to meet the ideological needs of English socialism. He says, it gained ground steadily, all party members tending to use newspeak words and grammatical constructions more and more in their everyday speech. The purpose of newspeak was not only to provide a medium of expression for the worldview and mental habits proper to the devotees of English socialism, but to make all other modes of thought impossible. It was intended that when newspeak had been adopted, a heretical thought, that is, thought diverging from the principles of English socialism, should be literally unthinkable, at least so far as the thought is dependent on words. Its vocabulary was so constructed as to give exact and often very subtle expression to every meaning that a party member could properly wish to express while excluding all other meanings and also the possibility of arriving at them by indirect methods.
Okay.
This was done partly by the intervention of new words, but chiefly by eliminating undesirable words and by stripping such words as remained of unorthodox meanings, and so far as to provide all secondary meanings, whatever, to get rid of them, okay? So we can see that when they define racism, racism's just defined in the current dictionary as being against somebody and hating somebody because of their race. However, the new definition is that nobody can be racist against white people. Only white people, in fact, can be racist. Okay, so they're changing the meaning of that word. So let's look at some other examples. So rigging an election right now is called defending democracy. Unconstitutionally impeaching a public official that is out of office when the Constitution states clearly in Article 1, Section 3, Number 7, that judgment in all cases of impeachment shall not extend further than the removal of office and disqualification to hold any office of honor, trust, or public for a public office in the future. Takes away the right to hold public office, okay? Please note that the word in the Constitution is and not or. The impeachment has to accomplish both. Passing legislation that strips a person from their ability to hold public office who is not in public office is called the Bill of Attainder. Article 1, Section 9, Number 3 prohibits Congress from passing a bill of attainder. The psychological warfare is how the virtual signaling of members of Congress state often and clearly that they must impeach Trump, who is not in office, so cannot be removed, and are proceeding with passing a bill of attainder. They say that they are doing it to, quote, uphold their duty to support and defend the Constitution. It is an inversion of reality and clearly unconstitutional. If both of these cases, the true meaning of the words is being changed to mean the opposite. They will say it enough so that most people will believe them. This is what's called brainwashing. Okay.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah.
So let's look at the phrases white supremacy, white guilt, white fragility, white privilege, and its companion concept of reparations for slavery. Article 1, Section 9, Number 8 of the Constitution states, no title of nobility shall be granted by the United States. And its opposite, Article 3, Section 3, Number 2 states, but no attainder of treason shall work, and this is the big word, shall work corruption of blood or forfeiture except during the lifetime of the person attainted. Okay? Just as you cannot inherit a title of nobility in the United States, according to the Constitution, you cannot inherit blame for what your ancestors did.
Our
politicians using terms like white guilt is clearly unconstitutional. They take an oath of office to support and defend the Constitution, yet they almost daily ignore the Constitution when they declare that there is white guilt. And since those who actually held slaves could have been constitutionally have been made to pay reparations to their slaves, the Constitution makes abundantly clear that guilt is not inherited. Yet the Marxist Democrats insist on passing an unconstitutional bills to make not the children of slave owners, but the great-great-grandchildren of slave owners and the great-grandchildren of a great majority of which never owned slaves, pay reparations, which is unconstitutional punishment that is exactly working corruption of blood and violates the principle of individual responsibility. It's also a mass punishment that doesn't regard anybody's guilt or not guilt. It's based on your race alone, which is, of course, racism. Okay? So, So everything they're doing is unconstitutional. So what is the goal of this Orwellian twisting of the meanings of very plain words and ignoring the Constitution in reality? Nothing less than the disenfranchisement and genocide of the white race.
Orwell, you know what I wish, Mitch, let me add something here. These rules and executive orders coming down from the dictator's office can be refused by the states, as far as I understand it. And I'm talking about if a state attorney general says, we will not in any way comply to this executive order, it is patently unconstitutional. That's one of our weapons to fight back with. And I hope to see more of that. But it has to happen. It's unconstitutional. Somebody's got to call that out. Go ahead.
See it at city and county levels. We haven't seen it really as much as at a state level, but we see cities and counties refusing to obey unconstitutional orders, and you have a duty, actually, to disobey an unconstitutional order if you're in public office, okay? So what we'll also talk about doublethink, where you hold two or more contradicting thoughts in your mind without realizing that it is a contradiction. Example of this is the phrase, white silence is violence. Well, silence is the opposite of violence. The phrase is a Stalin-esque attempt to make white people violate the Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination by admitting to imaginary crimes that they never committed. It also contradicts your First Amendment right of free speech. Freedom of speech also implies your right to not speak. White silence is not violence. It is your right to not be bullied by social justice warriors. So let's look at the concept of toxic masculinity. It is defined as manliness that perpetuates domination, homophobia, and aggression. You see, the operative effort here is to paint all males as bullies because bullies want to dominate, are homophobic, and are aggressive. A real man does none of these things, but the idea is to stereotype all men as being toxically masculine. Masculinity itself is the problem, and it is necessary to emasculate all men to allegedly end toxic masculinity.
Masculinity is toxic now. I get it.
Right.
Absolutely. That's what they're up to. Yep.
So the concept is stereotyping men just as white guilt stereotypes all white people. Further, toxic masculinity is described as the idea that men have to act tough, avoid showing all emotions. They can have social consequences for society. Please, this is insanely wrong. I have commanded troops, and I can say that acting tough is a path to failure. Being tough is a path to getting respect and permitting a leader to establish what's called a command presence. Mm-hmm. Showing emotion in combat is deadly for both the commander and the troops. A great commander like Chester Puller or Hank Anderson is able to stand on the battlefield and ignore bullets flying all around them. That is leadership. If you feel fear, then your troops will be afraid in the midst of battle, and you will get emotional over your buddy that just got killed, making you the next to die. Okay, so that's why you suppress those emotions. So toxic masculinity is described as toughness, anti-femininity. Men should reject anything that is considered feminine, and power, seeking power and status, so that they can gain the respect of others. Men should be tough because it is their natural job to provide and protect others. I've got a car pulling in front of me here.
No, you're completely correct. That's exactly
okay,
right.
So let me see. Effeminate men do not usually have problems with other men. It is women that detest at a gut level femininity in males. Women like men to be masculine. Power is something women demand in men. They desire men with power and status. And that's exactly what women are looking for. Now, when I was a vice cop, I witnessed this firsthand because we would get called to bars to... because there were prostitutes. These are upscale bars, and they didn't want bars, okay?
Right.
So what we do is we would go down to arrest the prostitutes. Now, this is a little bit tricky because you're bound up in a bar, so, of course, you're going to be in these because if her body language says she's not interested in you, but her mouth is suggesting that she is, then you know that she is a prostitute because you don't want to harm a woman that's just looking for a date, to pick up a date, okay? So,
pick up $100 bill.
In this process, I started also, I would play around a little bit and investigate. So, like, if I was talking to a woman and I wanted her to, I wanted her to go away because I have to do my job and look for the hookers. Okay. I could tell her that I was like a janitor or a school teacher or an insurance salesman or a preacher, and she'll mm-hmm. walk away from me. So I did the obverse. I would sometimes tell women that I was like the consul general at the embassy of some wealthy nation or something, or I was a lawyer or something like that. Okay, now they're intensely interested in me. So status and power are important in men and women getting together in the first place, okay? So women aren't interested in snowflake men and effeminate men. They're just not interested in that, okay? No matter what they say, you might get into their friend zone, but you'll stay there in the friend zone.
Well, that's of course, that's the limit of it, right?
Yeah. And so the purpose of psychological warfare is to attack everything that makes a nation or society have any integrity and destroy the foundations of the culture so a new one can be imposed. Social justice warriors and snowflakes are the very enemy of personal, familiar, or even national survival. Undercutting identity of a person is how you psychologically destroy them. As the Danish existential philosopher Søren Kierkegaard said, if you label me, you negate me. Okay? So labeling is what this is all about, going on in our society constantly. Okay? So logical preparation of the battlefield entails destroying your opponent's identity, self-esteem, weakening the resolve, and making them weak. White guilt and toxic masculinity are not concepts. They are weapons to be wielded against you. Rigging an election is defending democracy, and white silence is violence, are psychological concepts that form the confusion foundation upon which the Marxist enemy can construct more lies to cow the masses. So I hope most of that got through to the audience, because the first thing you've got to know in any war, and we are in a war, we're in a war for our very souls and the spirit of our country. You have to know how it works. You have to understand what they're doing to you, and you have to reject it. I mean, it's like your white guilt meter has to be on empty, okay? So if you're going to make it through this, okay? So let me give you if we've got time, let me give you a quick military update on what's going on militarily. Okay.
Got about 7 minutes, Mitch. 7 minutes.
Okay, things are moving along fastly. So General Lloyd Austin, the new Secretary of Defense, has, at the request of the Democratic Party, decided to take a 60-day pause to purge our military of white supremacists. What is his definition of a white supremacist? According to today's India International News, it is any of the following. One, anybody who does not think the politically accepted way. Two, any conservative. Three, any libertarian. And four, any Christian. All of those independently make you into a white supremacist. And if you remember, they called Tulsi Gabbard a white supremacist, even though she's not white. So it's like white supremacists are probably the most culturally diverse group of people in the world, because if you think the wrong thing, it doesn't matter what your race is, you're a white supremacist, okay? Since most of our frontline combat troops are Rangers...
Mitch, you don't even have to think anymore. You just have to be, and you're automatically a white supremacist. They don't care. If you're white, you're trash to the trash of our society.
Right.
Weird.
So, since most of our frontline combat troops, our Rangers and our special forces are white, this will make the American military weak. And what happens when you're weak? That's when people attack, is when you're weak, okay?
Sure.
Another point of weakness, U.S. destroyer John S. McCain was chased out of international waters by the that China claims as its own, Okay. This is a gross display of weakness, leading China to be assured that it may invade Taiwan without any military help coming from the USA. Chairman Xi ordered the Chinese Maritime Patrol into weapons-free status, where they are encouraged to fire upon and attack any ship entering what the Chinese claim as their territorial water, but which is internationally claimed as international waters. Okay. However, Japan is showing some strength. When Chinese ships went to seize Senkaku Islands, Japan sent a strong naval force there to drive them off. Biden has befriended Iran and took the designation of Iranian-backed Houthi rebels off the terrorist list, refused to deliver the arms that Saudi Arabia and the UAE purchased, and stopped all logistical support for the Saudi war against the Iranians in Yemen, as well as restarting funding to the Palestinians and allowing them to open their embassy in D.C. He is showing weakness, deceit, duplicity, and treachery. He is in all the ways. He attacks because of weaknesses. China and Iran involved.
Okay, hold on. Go back. 3 sentences. Back up. Let's do them again.
Okay. So Biden contracted that he's putting off arms in support for Saudi Arabia's war in Yemen. He declared the Houthi rebels as not terrorists, even though they're Iran-backed terrorist proxies. Okay. I mean, if you go there, they'll hack your head off, but they're not terrorists. Not to Biden or not. Okay, so Biden is showing weakness, deceit, duplicity, and treachery, and he is in fact making the world a very dangerous place. He is making war inevitable because attacks are the response to weakness, and he is showing weakness. Okay, so he's getting us closer. Now, last time it was Tony Blinken, the Secretary of State, that said that Iran was 2 weeks away from nuclear weapon. But I did further research, and Israeli intelligence, who's, of course, very interested in this, they said, well, no, they're more like 4 to 6 months away from having a nuclear weapon. But Israel and the Sunni nations are intending to attack Iran's nuclear facilities. They're not going to put up with this nonsense anymore. They can't show weakness because it'll hurt them if they do. Okay, so, the United States is losing its allies, you know. It's like we're making friends with the weakest people and we're shoving off the strong people. Uh-huh. You know, we have not re-engaged with the world. We have actually showed ourselves to be a weak country, not a country of leadership, but just a weak and deceitful country is what he's turned us into. And we can see it. We can see it happening. Biden is making war inevitable. He's making World War III inevitable. But you know what? That may be part of the plan, you know?
It's a question. Do we really want to credit Biden with anything? My feeling is this is a Susan Rice Obama 2.0 is what we're watching. I don't think Biden is calling the shots.
I don't think he is either. I think, but he's like the sock puppet that's put up there to be the front man. Okay.
Oh, sure.
In most communist revolutions, they like to do that. They like to put a front man up there to take the blame for anything that goes wrong. Then they can get rid of him in a purge and bring up somebody else. This will happen. Kamala Harris will be president. And she is Marxist as you can get. Okay. She's Marxist. She's racist. She hates America. And she will do all in her power to destroy this country.
No question. None. I do think we don't want to make the mistake of underrating Obama in the background, carefully out of sight, pulling major strings and directing a lot of things. And I think that that's a very fair assessment. We'll see. Maybe in time, might tell more than we know now. We'll see. Mitch, thank you very much. Really good job stepping around
impediments. Thank you. I'm sorry about all the interference.
Not your fault.
Okay. All right.
No problem.
Well, thank you much. And I'll see what I can do to fix that. Okay.
All right. Well, it's hard when they're after us, but we'll do our best. All right. We'll talk soon. Thank you. All right. Mitchell Henderson. There he goes. All right. We got most of that, right? Okay. Back in a flash.